Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, family. Welcome, kings and queens, goddesses and gods. Welcome to another segment of Let's Talk About It All. Today, it's going to be a special show. I have a brother that I've known, you know, almost as long as I've known Jay. This brother is the epitome of what I'd be speaking about when I say being self-sufficient and creating something that we can call ours, something that is going to work for us, and it's an institution that can be used to help us with our ills. We have a lot of issues in our community. However, other people seem to want to come and act like they want to fix it. And we are a unique people. So even if another ethnicity is sincere about helping us, they cannot do it without us at the helm, guiding them and showing them what it is that we need to be done. Far too often, that's the case where it's being funneled down to us and we're being told what it is that we need or who we should be or how we should act and present ourselves. This brother has committed himself, has made the sacrifices. I've seen his growth. I've seen his struggles, and now I see his triumphs from the tenacity and the passion and the love for us as a people that drives him to do what he does. I want him to come and explain further what it is that he's doing. As I said on other shows where we could take our money and put it together. I believe I mentioned it last week that we could have 300 individuals donate $1,000, and that's $300,000 towards something that can be utilized to help us, to employ us, to be able, we see. Let's think about it. Let's think about those of you from Patterson and more than likely any other inner city. There are businesses that are around in your area that hires predominantly who owns them. And it's nothing wrong with that. It's nothing wrong with taking care of your own. We just have to get back to that point. We have to refine ourselves and get back to that point. It's not a thing that it was never done. It's a thing that we don't do it often enough now. So hopefully the brother is ready and he can come in and he can, you know, speak for himself, because I'm personally going to donate to his cause. I'm going to donate, you know, some money towards him doing what needs to be done as far as getting the institution ready for us to embrace us and to help us and to guide us. I'm right off the bat. He got $100. I'll donate $100 towards that right now. As soon as you give me the information, that's a starting offer. And whatever anyone else can donate, whatever you can donate, nothing's too big, nothing's too small. Like my brother Jay Sean says, I'm going to start with $100. You know, because I believe in the brother and I believe in what he's doing. I believe what he's doing is something that's overdue. It's totally needed for us to be able to do what it is that we are capable of doing as a unit, as a body, as a kingdom. Let's strive to start looking at ourselves as the kings and queens that we were prior to the hiccups that happened to us that affects us in some ways now. We were kings and queens. Many of us, you know, as I've said on other shows, speak from a position of post-slavery. I'm ready for us to start looking at ourselves pre-slavery. What were we prior to that? Even those of us who were here prior to that, what were we doing? I can tell you, we were working together. We were working as a unit, working as a family to do what it is to take care of ourselves, to take care of the village. How is it where any other ethnicity take care of themselves and it's considered normal? When we do it, it's considered other than normal. No, it's normal for us as well. And we have to make it normal, and we have to create the institutions that's going to employ us. I was speaking last week about how we have to, you know, be mindful of striving to work to be free of work. We got so caught up to the point where we're working just to maintain, just to pay bills, when we have the capability to be working, to be independent. That's the ultimate goal, to be independent of anyone so that no one can stop you from saying what it is that you want to say, supporting who it is that you want to support, or representing what it is that you want to represent. And with the job, sometimes that's complicated. It's not easy to do because, let's face it, the saying, the one who pays the money decides what the tune is going to be. That's just the way it is. You know, I have my own personal incident that I remember being at a job and being muzzled to the point where I couldn't maneuver the way that I wanted to based on being concerned about what the job would think, and an incident where this individual basically at the time was my supervisor, was my boss, disrespected me. And had it been any other situation, I would have handled it differently. But because at the time I was in need of the job, I had to handle it in a way that would allow me to say what I had to say and keep the job. Anybody who's on the line, I need, if the brother Abdul Akbar, if you're on the line, press 1 so that I can bring you in. If you're on the line listening to me right now, press 1 so that I can bring you in. Now, as I said, it was a situation that took a lot for me to humble myself when the individual reared up at me and raised his voice at me. Now, he's a supervisor. Ultimately, you know, life took care of him and, you know, he lost the position. But the point is, when you're at a job, you're at the mercy of whoever the supervisor or the boss is, and they can sometimes do things to you or say things to you that you're not comfortable with. And because you're in need of the job, you have to take it. You have to accept it. So with that being said, why are we not doing everything possible to become a conglomerate, to become a kingdom, to be at the table with everyone else? Why should everyone else sit at the table and we peeking through the door or we looking through the window, we're knocking on the window? Why should we have to do that? There's no reason for us to have to do that. And I'm going to end right there because I think I got my brother on the line. And I'm going to let him, you know, explain to you what he's doing. Hello? Welcome to Let's Talk About It All. This is Sade. Who am I speaking to?
This is your brother, Akbar McIntyre. How you doing?
Okay. I'm great. I'm great to hear your voice, brother. What I want to start with, you know, because I said to individuals on occasions that we have to be mindful with education. If we're going to send our children to get educated, we want to send our children to be educated on things that they can bring back to the community that can be helpful to the community, not just to get a degree that they're not going to use, that we're going to be paying money back or they're going to be responsible to pay money back. So with that being said, I want you to let us know, you know, your educational background.
Well, first and foremost, you know, hey, I graduated from the University of the Alexander Hamilton Housing Project, first and foremost. And I mastered in psychology. It was the school of hard knocks that prepared me for this journey, and it was my experience, strength and hope, and surviving all of those different elements that prepared me to take this journey and also be fit enough to be at the helm. So, that's my education. But in terms of my formal education, you know, I went back to college in pursuit of higher education at the age of 43. And was something that transpired in my personal life that I had to encounter. I had made the decision to go back in pursuit of higher education, and I preferred to move into the field of social work, human service, which is broad, and it felt right in line with what I wanted to do in terms of a career path. And so by default, I became a social worker. And it was because of my personal experience with the criminal justice system and acquiring my commercial driver's license and having got my Class A driver's license and all my different endorsements that prepared me for certain jobs. State of New Jersey, because of a conviction 21 years prior to that date, this is like in 2009, talking about a case that happened in 1988, where I was held accountable for selling drugs within 1,000 feet of school. So 21 years later, after accomplishing, you know, my commercial driver's license and all my different endorsements, the state of New Jersey took it upon themselves to suspend my endorsement, but also allow me to maintain my commercial driver's license. So, and this is during the time that, you know, they were eliminating the question on the application of whether you was convicted of a crime or not. But at the same token, that was contradictory because the fact that I didn't have to answer the question on the application, I had to confront that in the interview when I go for a driving job and they have to get a copy of my driver's abstract, which would list the fact that my endorsements were suspended for whatever apparent reason that is. So what I didn't have to answer on the application, I'm going to would have definitely had to confront in the interview. And the exposure of being labeled a formerly incarcerated ex-felon would have came out in the rinse. And so I thought that was kind of, you know, contradictory for a person who have had at that time long since changed their life around, been clean and sober for 16, 17 years, and having made other progress in my personal development, and was still being marginalized. And so I said to myself, this is something that I personally have to address. And so at the time I was living in Essex County, you know, and I was released and had to go to these different reentry programs to get certain things going, information I need, resources. And I was able to go visit these particular places to get these different resources and information around jobs and other things for people that were formerly incarcerated. And so I said, it's time for me to carve out something for myself that I believe, you know, would not only empower me, also empower the community that I represent. And knowing that there were tens of thousands of other brothers that was facing pretty much the same thing that I was facing, just that one conviction, you know, kind of like, you know, discredited me. And it became a collateral consequence of having to face these different consequences of being labeled an ex-felon and not being able to aspire to different levels because of that. And so I said to myself, you know, some things that I had to do. And at the meantime, at that time, I drafted an organization, put it together, different services that I would like, you know, that I would like, that I knew would be beneficial to others as well. And so I created an organization by the name of Humble Beginnings Incorporated because it reflected my personal experience. The fact that I, at that time, it came from nothing and became a little something, you know, something enough just to reach back and pick the next brother or the next sister up right beside me. And so Humble Beginnings was born out of my personal struggle. And so I created a model program that I knew would be ideal for issues that we know we're facing in our community. So, and here we are to this very day, 13, 14 years now, we here at this level.
Okay. Tell the people, you know, some of the things that you have going on, you know, some of the programs within the program that you're gonna be on.
Yeah, that's all well and good. One of the things that we've done that was really, I believe, was strategic, right, is that we started a mobile soup kitchen. Mobile soup kitchen, and the strategy for establishing that mobile soup kitchen was that the soup kitchen became a needs assessment where we can conduct surveys. It became an assessment tool to be able to assess the needs of the community. Because when you got certain people that are hovering to you and flocking to you, gravitating to you every week for a hot meal, you understand what I'm saying? And you begin to assess their needs, their greater issues, their greater problems, gives you a broader view of what is really impacting the people's lives in your neighborhood. And from a professional standpoint, collecting this data is very essential to us being able to move forward, being able to raise certain questions, certain arguments in the circle of the politicians and the community leaders, and raise certain arguments as to which problems are impacting the community more than others. And so hunger was at the core of it. And also at the core of it, there were also issues of mental health and trauma, as well as there were people who were flocking to us who were unemployed, mainly unemployed, unemployable and underemployed. And so mainly, and these are some of the contributing factors of why hunger permeates our community in the manner that it does. But then in the same token, we confronted a lot of people that were addicted to drugs, homeless in the street and displaced. These are some of the issues that we knew. And when we did our assessment and categorized these problems according to race and ethnicity, African-American always seemed to have been 50 to 60% strengthened in these different areas. And so we recognize that the most prone individual that's most prone to homeless on any given day in the city of Patterson was the African-American male. Then at the same token, we saw that there was an influx of African-American working women who were more prone to being homeless because of the newly developed rental structures that's being built in the community, that with the exorbitant amount of rent that they can't even afford because of the poverty level that they're at, the maximum income level that they were. They work every single day of the week, but they don't have the resources to afford all of the high exorbitant amount of rent that's being imposed on people now in the community. So there's an influx of homelessness as it relates to working women. So these are things that we've assessed over the years. And in doing these things, we knew and understand that it's time to create a center of hope, you know, a center of hope that will, you know, give us the opportunity to serve the community in the capacity that we knew from years ago, decades ago, as well as what we became to identify within our contemporary times. The fact that we believe that what was left out over these years and over these decades, that there was no centers of hope in our community that was empowering us with tools to help us solve our problems. And knowing all of these different things and having the ability to look over the past 10, 20, 30 years and assessing the community issues as we see them now, we come to realize that we're still dealing with the residual impact, the war on drugs. The war on drugs, the crack epidemic, we're still dealing with that aspect of disenfranchisement, as well as the impact of what AIDS and HIV has done to our community, all these different things. We're seeing that our community, our family life is being decimated and broken by these different elements that we continue to still suffer from. And
For those who don't know, Brother Akbar, you're talking about the 80s. You're talking about the 80s for those who don't know.
80s and the 90s. It's 80s and the 90s because in the 90s is when those policies were even stretched further beyond what the Reagan administration was able to implement. In the 90s, they were stretched even further, you know, with the crime bill that, you know, added other clauses to the equation that further decimated, particularly the African American community. So these are things that we know.
One of those being that school law that you were talking about that came up in that
three strikes you outlaw, that crack epidemic law where people that were getting busted for powder cocaine were getting less time for those who were getting caught with crack cocaine. It was 100 times worse, and the convictions was even stiffer. And particularly in marginalized communities like we was raised in or that we come from were targeted. When the studies have shown that people of other ethnicities, particularly Caucasian people, were 3 to 4 times more likely to engage in the same criminal behavior, but there was never no enforcement. There was never no targeting, pulling over anybody, catching nobody, stopping nobody at the traffic light. There was no enforcement in those areas. Studies have shown that. But our community was targeted. And at random, we were easily pulled over because of smelling of marijuana or the suspicion of being, drugs or some kind of any kind of suspicious activity that we did. We were pulled over. Pulled over, arrested, convicted, and gave them the stiffer penalty, things that other people did 3 times more likely. And we're still going through that right now. We're dealing with the residual impact of that right now as it relates to, crime and violence in our community. So,
Absolutely. So, now, where is your program located? I wanted you to expound a little about where it's located, what it is that you have, and kind of how you had to go about getting what you have.
Well, we operate purely throughout the whole entire city of Patterson, but we recently purchased the abandoned Northside Library building on North Main and Arch Street. That's in the Patterson's First Ward. And Humble Beginners Incorporated recently launched a neighborhood revitalization project, and it's labeled the Northside Community Action Project. Why the Northside? Because we've acquired other properties in that neighborhood that we've built, and made useful to the neighborhood. And the fact that the neighborhood is one of the most marginalized neighborhoods in the state of New Jersey, and the issues of African-American issues that we just described are the starkest. You have the starkest issues in the Northside community, a neighborhood where 10% of the population are unemployed, a neighborhood where you have over 300 abandoned residential structures. There's a whole wide string of blighted and abandoned buildings that could easily be purchased, renovated, and made for public use. There's an issue with unemployment that is so strict because of the fact that people in the neighborhood are less likely to have 21st century job skills. We talk about a neighborhood where 54% of the workforce are women, which is pretty much no coincidence why crime and violence in the neighborhood is a male-dominated phenomenon. You understand what I'm saying? So all of these different things that we're talking about that have transpired from the 80s, 90s up until where we're at right now are even more stark in 2023 in a neighborhood that nobody's really given even the slightest second look at. We're talking about a building that's been abandoned for 12 years with a revitalization plan that goes all the way back to 2009. Nobody invested a nickel up until this very day in the revitalization of the neighborhood. But then when you start talking about neighborhood revitalization, what can you be talking about? In most cases, people are thinking that revitalization is more about brick and mortar. There's a whole lot of brick and mortar revitalization going on in the 4th Ward and the other various 5th Ward areas in the city of Patterson. But those areas are not as in the starkest condition as this particular neighborhood that we're talking about. When we talk about revitalization, neighborhood revitalization, that neighborhood revitalization in the manner that we understand it to be has to be geared towards helping to repair people's lives, fixing people as opposed to brick and mortar. Revitalization has to start with an investment in particular people, people that live in a community. Because if you revitalize the brick and mortar and not make a significant investment in the people, the brick and mortar is going to reach its decadence faster than you think than you can even imagine. So our Northside Community Action Project is a project that is geared towards addressing and empowering the community, the people in the community with the tools to solve some of their problems.
Okay. You said a lot. And everything you said, you know, oftentimes I'm speaking on that on the show. And, you know, people have to be mindful that when you're telling the truth about how we have been marginalized and how certain laws have affected our way of life and our mobility, our upward mobility, you're not saying that we're victims. We're not taking the victim way out, because often I hear people say, you know, people get on the show and they say, oh, the blacks, the African Americans, they look at themselves as victims. It's not a point of looking at yourself as a victim, more so than understanding what caused you to be in certain positions that was out of your control at the time, so that you can approach it in a different manner and rectify the situation. Because if you're sick and you don't know why you're sick, how can you treat you? How can you come up with the proper treatment? You know?
Right.
So that's what you did. You looked at what we need, especially. You know, I'm in awe of how you went about it with the food. Now, when you're feeding the people, the feet people are in a vulnerable stage. So they're opening up to you because, look, you're giving them a necessity. We need food, clothes, and shelter. So when a person is being fed, they're being honest, open and honest to you about what they need and what can help them. And as I said, you were right on point with, you know, the disparities about even doing time. To do your time, to come home, and that past issue that occurred over decades ago is thrown back in your face and say, look, because you did this, we can't hire you in this position. And mind you, this law was passed by, you know, one of the guys that people were screaming and hollering, saying he was the first black president. Clinton. Yeah, by this guy, the thing about this, people, we were, as many of us as a people, were bigging this guy up, and this guy was putting us in a loop and putting us in a worse position, and we studied voting, and to this day, many of us are diehard Democrats. diehard Democrats, regardless to what we see in our cities that is being ran by Democrats in the suffering that we are doing at the hands of these individuals that we are voting for. I would urge every individual, if you want to play the political game, first, don't register independent. Let them earn your vote. Don't just be a diehard Republican nor a diehard Democrat. Be for your best interest. Whoever you vote in office has to have your best interest. And first of, and before that, we have to have an agenda. We have to develop an agenda and stop just throwing our votes away because we've been fed the line that people died so that we could vote. People didn't die so that we could throw our vote away. People didn't die for that. They died for change. They died for us to have a seat at the table. They died for equality. And if we're throwing our vote away, we're dishonoring them more so than by not voting at all, because we're helping somebody get in that's going to mistreat us. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
go ahead, brother.
Well, you said a mouthful, brother, but at the same token, I don't take no position, you know, as a Democrat or a Republican. You know, I'm a human service provider, and I focus more on what's in the best interest of our humanity, you know, and like you said, our people fought and died not just to be, you know, to vote, but they fought and died to be free, to be able to exercise their right to self-determination. And this is where we're at right now. We're in a position now to build something in our community that would be essential to empowering our community, particularly community members, with the tools to solve their own problems. So our goal is to take this abandoned building and through the process of adaptive reuse, going to take an old building that was once a library and convert it into a community family resource center. Services ranging from youth and family development, vocational rehabilitation and job development, behavior health services, which consist of mental health and substance use, as well as victims of crime, trauma, component in place for continuing education, vocational rehabilitation, and through our the acquisition of other properties that we've secured in that neighborhood, we're going to continue to expand our community garden initiative and create a program for nutritional education for people in the community, making fresh, wholesome food supplies available to the members of the community at no cost. It's a matter of creating a safe space so people can come and share their experience with and hope, while at the same time be able to provide services to them that will help them overcome some of their obstacles to gain employment, obstacles, you know, in their personal life. We want to empower families. We want to empower the youth through empowering their family. One of the greatest things that we can do for kids is empower their families. And we've been able to address the redundant statements that were made from various people in our community when they asked the question that, what are we going to do for our kids? I think one of the greatest things that we can do for a kid is empower their family. How are they uncles? How are they grandmothers?
Absolutely.
How are they mothers, their fathers? How are they address their family issues? Because at the core of the African-American problem, right, the core of the African-American problem, I'm going to repeat that again, the core of the African-American problem, whether it's in Paterson, New Jersey, South Carolina, wherever you go, the core of the African-American problem is broken, truncated family relationships. And it is in many instances that we believe somewhere down another that we need to be independent from family. That's a problem. So the strategy is community and family, empower the family. You know what we could do to the neighborhood when we empower the family? The neighborhood changed. We changed the trajectory of the neighborhood when we empower the family. When Uncle Bill got a job, when my father got a job, when my mother got a job, I got a job. We strengthen the family, whether the families are just together, the mothers and the fathers, or whether they're monogamous or not. The fact that we got services and, you know, that is directed towards empowering families, those family relationships eventually begin to, you know, reconcile itself. You know, so this is what we're about. You know, everybody else is about this. Seems like, you know, when we talk about family and empowering our brothers and sisters in the community from an age-old problem, or recover from an age-old problem that we still find sentimental, we have still remain sentimental towards. Got a lot of people who, you know, really like frowning on that. Like every day, like, really? How do you frown on empowering your community members, man, your family members? How do you frown on that? So this is pretty much how it goes in the city of Patterson. But we've been holding the line, brother. It's been very, very tough. We had some opposition from people who didn't believe in us. The mere fact that we carved out a conversation for ourselves to own the building. And that was kind of strange for some people, because in the mindset of the people, it appears that we are not supposed to own that. We're not supposed to think like that. But in our freedom, in our mindset of freedom, you know, we have a mindset that is drenched in freedom, you know, free thinking, the right to self-determination. Owning the building was a second nature thought that always transpired in my mind. So when it was very, very difficult for us to come to an agreement, as far as redevelopment agreement, we said, all right, if there's a problem with the redevelopment agreement and the strategy that you believe would be good for us and for both sides, and why don't we just carve out a cut and dry purchase sale agreement? It's not that serious. We're not no big major developers looking to make millions and millions of dollars. Let's carve out a cut to the point, cut through the chase purchase and sell agreement, and we'll buy this building from you. And so the red tape was put out there, you know, a whole lot of, you know, once we got to some kind of resolution, continue to move the goalposts. Goalposts would move. We come to another resolution, they move the goalposts. And we found ourselves investing thousands and thousands of dollars into the acquisition process before we even owned the building. And it is even more add insult to injury. We've had a community leader who was supposed to be on the side of the people who was representing that particular ward, who was in direct opposition of us acquiring this building and turning it into a community center. One of our own brothers. And so without having to call anybody's name, we definitely have to maintain truth about how we got to this point and why did it take so long. It took us 4.5 years to get this resolution, and mainly because the brother man was the opposition. So when you hear people talk about what the white man has done and what the white man continue to do, you also got to focus on what some of us are doing in the privacy of these little offices and these little rooms, these little quiet little spaces, you know, what they continue to do in the behind the scenes to undermine our efforts in empowering ourselves to do what we need to do for ourselves. So I'm very, very, very open to that. You know what I'm saying? And like like you said before, we've got to the point where we got to speak truth to power. And at the same token, we got to be humble, because my whole entire mission is to serve humanity. Serve humanity. Serve people with compassion and without judgment. You know, and we have a diversified group of people on our team. We have a very diverse board of directors. We have a very diverse supporters. We have a diverse team of people that are lending their expertise and their revenue to seeing that this project come to fruition. So it's not about our racial issue, but we do know that, you know, we're in the heart of a community that is predominantly Black and Hispanic. Poverty is at its all-time highest. And so, yes, it's very essential for us to focus totally on what we need to do in our community, man, because we're still dealing with that. Crime-ridden, brothers getting shot every day, every other night, this might get shot. Violence that is high, is running rampant. I think it's time for this center. The center is time in the heart, in the ocean of problems. This particular center, upon its completion, going to be a beacon of light in a dark place.
Absolutely.
There are people
that
right now
said,
that are on the ground that are waiting,
brother,
hoping,
brother,
praying.
Brother Abdul Agbor. Brother Abdul.
Yes, sir.
We have a call on the line that wants to, you know, speak with you. Is that, you open to that? And any, you know, because we want to hear the community. They've listened to you. We want to hear, know, how they feel, because we're basically appealing to them, calling out to them, because we want their help. We want to make this,
right,
as you say, that beacon of hope in the community. So anybody on the line, press one, and, you know, let's continue this conversation. Welcome to Let's Talk About Love. Call of your live.
Good evening. Very nice
good
topic
evening
tonight. Your guest speaker was very enlightening. I want to thank you for enlightening me also about the project that you're heading off down in the fourth ward, you said, right?
That's the first ward.
First ward. I'm so sorry. Nice things that you're doing in that ward, and I'm glad that even though it took a long time to get where you wanted to be, I'm glad that you can finally see your dream or your mission coming forward. Patterson has a lot of work to do. I don't even want to talk, like you said, about race. Just as a community, we really need to start getting ourselves together. Patterson looks terrible. If you're up in age as I am, I remember when it looked at decent, livable. You drive down now, you don't even know where you're at. It's just, it's impossible. I don't know the people that's ahead. Like you said, in these rooms, do they ever drive through to find out what it looks like? Because they really need to find out what it looks like where they're heading up talking about stuff, because I don't see anything that they're working on. But the one thing I wanted to bring to the table with you is that this month I'm going to start a program for young boys. I have a couple people I wanted to teach the youth how to do chess, checkers, and play cards. But I also want to talk to them about these things make you use your mind. An ability to be able to, you know, the bishop, the, you know, all the teams is on a chess board. I'm heading it up this month. I got the people that's going to help me teach the youth how to play it. I'm also going to be able to have something that I could, like, have someone maybe come and talk to them. Like you said, you have to talk to the youth and get them started, interested in something, for that as they're growing up, they have something to look back on to know that they don't want to be where a lot of people are at this time. if you see that you have like a little opening to help me, I don't mean financially. I mean like maybe you know some kids that might want to have nowhere to go and they want to go for maybe an hour or so through the week to learn this. I would like for you to reach out to me. But as I said before, I'm very proud that your ward is really trying to beef up and do something for the people in that community.
Thank you very much, sister. One of the things that we were able to do, Brother Shadi, at our garden site is that we created a safe space at our guidance site because every other week we bring in volunteers to come in and help cut the grass, weed whack around the different edges of the garden, and then we'll bring out the tables and the chairs and we light up the grill. A couple weeks ago, we were able to do that and invited three young brothers from the neighborhood who just was walking past the garden. We got a garden on North First Street right around the corner from the building, and they came in and we welcomed them in to come in and sit down and talk. And at the same token, we were filming a documentary. And so just no coincidence, it's just by the grace of Allah that those young brothers was available to sit down in a sober environment to have a open discussion with us about what they believe that needs to be done in the neighborhood and what they would like to see change about their community, right? And this opportunity, sitting down at the table, breaking bread, burgers, chicken, salad, watermelon, water. Nobody was high, drunk. It was a sober conversation. Sat there and gave the brothers the opportunity to share their experience and what they believe it would be in their best interest as it relates to what we were trying to do in the community. And so I commend you for that, sister, because what you're talking about doing is providing a safe space for young people to come to and perhaps be able to open up themselves to you or to some of your volunteers that will be there for them to hear them out and perhaps give them some guidance on how to address some of their issues. So I commend you for that. And if there's anything that I could do in terms of information, you can leave your information in the with Shadia J. Sean, and I'll get back to you as early as possible.
Yeah, I don't know what, you know, I should know, but I don't know what ward I'm in, but I live 12th Ave and 26. So I'm up in, I think it's...
You're in the 4th Ward.
Okay, so I'm in the 4th Ward.
You're in the 4th Ward, sister.
Okay, and I'm also J. Sean's sister, so... you know,
oh, okay. Well, you're familiar with me as well because I always used to come to your brother's house, you know, right on the porch. I believe you're Jocelyn's mother.
No, I'm Nicole's mother.
Okay. I'm familiar with you, sister. No.
Yeah, Nicole.
I'll see you
soon.
I'll see you. And we'll speak face-to-face about some of these different things. And, we need as many people as possible. We need to create as many safe spaces as possible. We need to start in our basement. We need to start in our living room. We should be opening our doors. It should be like that at one time. Just open our doors. Doors will open. People's doors will open. We believed in family. We believed in community. And so I'm trying to bring back a tradition that's been long lost. And the beautiful thing about this tradition, we are looking to institutionalize it to the point where we can build it so much so that we can garner the funding necessary to empower all our community members with all of the essential things that they need. They're going to need them to live healthy, productive lives.
Okay, Brother Akbar, how can we, you know, donate to you, you know, give us some information on for those of us who are on the line who want to, you know, be a part of helping.
All right. This what you can do right now, you can go to our website. Our website is www.humblebeginningsncap.org. That is www.humblebeginningsncap.org. Humble Beginnings Northside Community Action Project.org. And you can go and look at the various program models that we have, the different things, updated things that we've accomplished so far. And there's a donation link. You can hit the donation link. And I recommend that you go to the PushPay app. And when you go to the PushPay app, you have a choice of three things that you can donate to. Those three things is our redevelopment project, our outreach project, which consists of our feeding program, our boxing events, and our drug and behavior health awareness quarterly events, or the general fund, which consists of things that we need to do in terms of paying our water bill, paying little different little things that we need to do for, like, stationery and different things like that. So if you want to make a contribution, you got the choice to do a one-time contribution, a monthly contribution, a yearly contribution, annual, semi-annual contribution, however you choose to do it. You go to the PushPay app, and you can do a recurring or one-time donation. I'm recommending that you submit your donation, your generous contribution to our redevelopment fund, because that fund is the most dire. We're in the process of fixing our building. We just completed the asbestos abatement, and now we're working on, you know, doing the gutting interior so that, and demolition, so that we can begin to measure and do all the other things that we need to do to the building, scraping away at all of that rubbish that's in that building, and we're going to be moving to the next phase. So the redevelopment fund is the most dire that we need support in, and that's just it. We also have an annual boxing event that we do every year in the city of Patterson. The beautiful thing about this year is that we was able to secure the legendary and newly renovated historical Hinchcliffe Stadium. It hasn't been a boxing event there in over 40 years. So we're bringing live and competitive boxing back to the city of Patterson at the historical Hinchcliffe Stadium. And the fee for those tickets are $25. Stuff that we have to do, we self-sustaining, self-sufficient organization. So the $25 go right back into the community. Goes right back into our organization's account. And it's a fundraising initiative. Give us the opportunity to exercise our entrepreneurial skill set to raise and generate money for our community organization projects. So it's a matter of giving back to the community. It's a matter of investing back into our community. And we're going to use boxing as a vehicle to get the message across. So, and that's Saturday, July 8th, between 1 and 7. It's going to be live entertainment. We have some local artists from the community that's going to come in and sing, rap, and they're going to do all positive messages. And that's a part of our Hands Up, Guns Down initiative, you know, addressing community violence and making boxing accessible to youth, the youth in our community. So that's also directed towards the establishment of a boxing gym, a new boxing gym in that Northside neighborhood, conversation that we got going on with some property owners in the community to lease us some space so that we can create a boxing gym, another boxing gym in that neighborhood, so that we can begin with really, really appeal to the community as well as the youth. So we got our hands full. It's second nature because this is something that we supposed to have been doing anyway. And so second nature to me because I know this is what we supposed to have been doing anyway. And support from the community is dire. So I really appreciate Brother Shadi and Brother Jay Sean inviting me on tonight so I can share this project. I want you guys to go check out our website, Northside Community Action Project, Humble Beginnings, ncap.org. You're going to be well informed about what we're doing, the history, the news, you know, the vision, the history of the building, what it was prior to being a library, and then after it became a library, how we was able to get it, how we were able to get our hands on it. So it was more of a historical transition of this historical building. We're part of history. The fact that we were able to acquire this building, purchase it outright, own it, renovate it, you know, build the organization's infrastructure to serve the greater needs of the people, pass it down to the next generation of community leaders that come behind us. This is the overall goal of this project. And I'm honored to be in this position.
Yeah, I'm honored to have you. Now, for those who, you know, may have a little problem with, you know, online, you know, doing things online, do you have another way that, Cash App or Zelle or something like that where they could donate to?
We have a Cash App account. The Cash App account is $HB(HB)IN25. That's our Cash App. And you can also
say that again. Say that Cash App again.
$HBIN25. All right? And then you can also mail a check, money order, to Humble Beginners Incorporated, P.O. Box 3103, Paterson, New Jersey, 07509. But the most expedient would be the push pay link on our website. You can get that done in 2 seconds and make it either a one-time contribution or a recurring.
Okay, we have another caller on the line, brother. Welcome to Let's Talk About Law, calling you live. Alaykum salam.
This is Brother Miles. How you doing?
Good.
Brother Miles, how are you?
I'm doing good. How many of you guys are actually reaching out to these gangbangers and try to get them to lay off what they're doing? Anybody reaching out to them to try to talk them down? I remember back in the days they used to have meetings with Pastor John. I don't know if you remember him. Pastor John used to always go to where these gangbangers and talk to them about what they're doing and try to get them to slow down. Is any of that going on with you guys?
Well, I just had a conversation with the sister earlier, just a few minutes ago, where we described how we took our community garden and made it a safe space for three young brothers who I don't know if they're gangbangers or not. But I did see tattooed over their face and on their neck and gave that appearance that they were gangsters in the street or some sort, or they were in the street, whatever, the street culture, I don't know. But at the same token, you know, the idea for addressing that concern is that we got to come to people with a strategy. The greatest strategy is to have institutions established and ready to address people. You know, one of the things that we have to acknowledge and accept when it comes to our brothers that are subscribing to the gang culture is that they don't see leadership in us because we don't have much of anything to offer them. You know, we're sitting around telling our brothers in the street to put down their guns when the gun in the United States of America is just as American as apple pie and Budweiser. Everybody has guns. You know, Pastor so-and-so saying, come here, drop your gun off at the church, man. We're going to turn our guns over, you know, and disarming our community. They young people nowadays take a different position because when they're looking at things in the light of facts and truth, everybody else got guns. Gun is as American as apple pie. White people send their kids to the gun range every single day, 9, 10, 12, 13 years old, teaching them how to use high-power artillery with the intention on exercising their Second Amendment right to bear arms in this society. And we're talking about gangbangers, and we're talking about gang culture. There was never a group of people, ethnic group of people, that never migrated to this country whose empowerment in this country wasn't gang affiliated or had a black market attached to their empowerment in this country. So when we talk about gangbanging, listen, when we talk about gangbanging, and I'm not promoting gang culture, I'm promoting organization. How do we take that organization of being together as a gang doing wrong and revert that into something where we can be as equally organized and use that organization for doing something good? It's very, very hard to do that unless you got the institutions established and the resources established to provide alternatives. Talking to these young brothers, they've been talking to these young brothers since they was blue in the face. You understand? Having these different, you know, relationships with law enforcement that didn't empower the community, nor did it repair the damage that was done over these decades. You understand?
Question.
We have to understand that this gun violence that we see erupting in the black community is recent, and every aspect of it has everything to do with the scavenging over the remains of the underground economy. We talk about the underground economy being the fuel to the violence that we find going on and erupting in our neighborhood. Now, it's a matter of creating safe space.
Another question.
Safe space. Yes, sir, brother.
Now, You see how the Patterson Council members down there act on TV and where they back. Do you think that is a bad note to the people in the streets of this city that, hey, if they can't get it together, how do they expect us to get it together in the streets?
I totally agree with you because what you see happening, transpiring at that council meeting is a direct reflection of just how broken the city is, just how broken, how misguided the people are. It's a direct reflection of all that. And so if your leaders can't seem to get it together, then, you know, you see the chaos erupting in the street. As soon as the council meeting over, you know, you see all the different things happening in the street. People are going through what they're going through, man. And it's reflective of what you see the leadership, you know, exhibit in their behaviors. No.
Thanks for the question, brother.
But I want to also let you know, good brother Miles, I want you to know that our mission is much more broader than that. We ain't operating for no politics. Everything is politics. Politics are local. We not operating from that posture. We operate from the posture of human service. And human service is the best method by which we as an organization has been able to appeal to the humanity of the people in our neighborhood. Human service. And in the efforts of building our community and rebuilding our community, we definitely have to build the institution with a welcoming culture creating a welcoming culture for people to come and put their trust in us.
And one other thing, you said about the voting thing. I couldn't believe we got over 160,000 people in this city, and only 12,000 of them voted.
Well, you want to know what that's about? And it is reflective like that all over the country. People are extremely, extremely apathetic towards the political process. As empowering as politics are, what kind of politics that represent you is the question. Why should I vote? This is what the people are asking. Why should I vote? There's no politics that's out there. When you start talking about politics, you're talking about values, people's values that represent people. What are my values? You find that we'll be voting for other people's values that don't even have much of anything to do with us, and it ain't going to do much of anything anyway. So this is what the people have. The people have this problem with voting, because we've been voting for decades. Remember, we were the ones who fought to be able to vote, died to be able to vote, and we was bamboozled, got the raw end of the stick. The voters' rights bill is rigged to where every 50 years they can go into the voters' rights bill as it relates to black folks and repeal some of these rights from us. This has happened right here, 2013, with Obama was the president. They repealed some of the Voting Rights Act, bills in the Voting Rights Act while Obama was the president, took away some of the voting rights the African Americans fought for. This right here in the United States of America, this is contemporary times. You understand what I'm saying? And so people are apathetic. And I'm not saying this in a way that was to say that nobody shouldn't vote. We need to organize on the local level. This is where it's at, on the local level. And we got to create values. We have to adopt a whole new set of values in order for us to change the trajectory of our community. We continue to hold on to this old twisted values that has not gotten us nowhere. And we have not built any institutions. We have not created no jobs for one another. We have not done anything to empower anyone. And we're expecting people to vote. I mean,
you're right.
I vote, but you got to start from the bottom up. I vote intelligently. And I try to have my best to have a relationship in one form or another with the people that are running. I want to hear what you got to say. And
can you imagine if you had 20 hits on your website and they voted for you, you could have been mayor?
I'm the mayor already. I'm the mayor already, brother. You want to know why? How you want to know I'm the mayor? And I want to educate you on this. Because the word mayor, listen, the mayor, believe it or not, you Muslim, right, my brother?
No, I'm not a Muslim, but I believe in reality, man.
Right, but here's what I want you to know about the word mayor. The word mayor derives from the Islamic word amir. The amir of the community is the one who delegates on behalf of the people. So I'm already the mayor. You already the mayor. Brother Shadi is already the mayor because we delegate on behalf of the people's needs. You understand what I'm saying?
You got
that
right.
So if you continue to be the mayor in your capacity and I continue to be the mayor in my capacity, we can change the trajectory of the community because we'll be all on the same page of addressing the needs of our community. And then we can take that, organize that, and begin to create a system of politics that is reflective of our values and begin to redirect the trajectory of how things go in our neighborhood. This is what this is all about. People are doing this right now under our nose right here in the city of Patterson. right now, and we still fighting and arguing with each other over what should happen to this one, what kind of slices this one should get, who should do this, who should run that, and all that kind of stuff. I took myself out of that, man. I took myself out of that, and I went against the grain. I went and did something that most people would not even think of doing. And as hard as it may seem and complicated as it may seem, there's some young people that are hoping that this project that we're proposing be successful, because they're looking forward to being at the helm. And it's inspiring. You have to inspire our young people. We have to inspire people.
Yeah, because they're the next generation.
We got to invest in ourselves. Excuse me?
They're the next generation coming up with the city.
This is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
This is what I'm saying. The goal is to pass something down to them. Then nobody passed nothing down to us.
Exactly.
We got to do something. We got to carve something out for ourselves, and we got to exercise our right to self-determination before it's too late. And there's nothing that reflects the people. There's nothing that reflects the people better than the institutions that they establish for themselves.
True, true, true.
All right, brother.
No, so
do I, brother? Well, if you want to finish up, but that what you just said there is profound. But if you want to add on, go ahead, because we're getting ready to call it a night. It's been great having you, but you can elaborate on that last thought, and then we'll call it a night.
Yeah, we're gonna give you 2 more minutes.
Well, I want to thank you, Brother Shadi, Brother Miles, Brother Jay Sean, all you guys that call in, and those that are listening. I'm just a humble brother, man. I'm just a humble brother. I'm just serious about what I do. I'm no nonsense. I'm more no nonsense with myself first and foremost, because I have to check myself before I wreck myself. I don't ask people to do what I wouldn't do. We got a lot of work to do, and anybody that want to come and volunteer at the garden, want to come in and help us clean up, we got to chop some trees down in the back of that building. Anything that we did little things like that we need, we want to paint murals on the wall. We want to get some things, some positive affirmations. I want to create a list of volunteers, community-based volunteers that are ready and willing to come out and be a part of history, man. This is history here. We're changing history, We're on the right side of history. And I don't know how long I'm going to live. I'm not sick. May Allah continue to give me good health and wellness. I'm in pretty good shape. I am humble enough to know that from God we come, to God we return. And that could be any moment. When that happens, I want to die on the right side of history. I want to die being a servant of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. I want to die on that premise. And I want to be on my deathbed, serving humanity, giving myself to greater causes. And I just want to welcome those that are out there. Check us out online. You can check us out on Facebook, Humble Beginnings Incorporated Facebook page. You can check us out on our website. We also got Humble Beginners Community Outreach.com website. That's all about things we've done. And our outreach service as we was continuing to build to this point. But right now, it's just about building this community, building an organization, and also creating an avenue for people to get involved with what we're doing. So you can go on our website. You can either sign up to volunteer in our food pantry, our mobile soup kitchen, our community garden project, whatever you can do, whatever you want to do as we continue to grow towards the building and establishment of our center. There's going to be plenty of things that you can do, you can lend yourself to.
Great. Thank you for coming on, because it was well needed. It was a conversation that I had last week where I was speaking about, you know, us doing for ourselves. And I always say, by no means am I prejudiced against any other nationality. I'm just for us being independent and self-thinkers and self-doers like everyone else. That's just what I advocate. I hope my brother Dre on the line and he heard, because I was telling him that there's people out there doing what, you know, what I was actually talking about. So I'm hoping that he's inspired, and I'm hoping everybody that was on the line is inspired. And those of you who are in the Patterson area, reach out to Brother Abdul Akbar and volunteer. You know, give back. It's not always about, you know, if you don't have the money and you have the time, then the time is just as valuable as money. But if you don't have the time and you have the money, then that is just as valuable. We have to be willing to give of ourselves to change our conditions. Our conditions will not change until we change ourselves. So with that being said, you know, I like to thank, you know, Brother Abdul Akbar. I like to thank Sister Lisa, Brother Miles, and everybody who tuned in on the line tonight. Special thanks to my brother Jay Sean for handling the production side. I'd like for everyone to tune in every Monday to Humble X Visions from 8:30 to 9:15. Tune in every Thursday to the Lisa Experience from 8 to 9 p.m. Tune in every Friday to Keeping It Real from 8 to 10 p.m. Tune in every Sunday to the Point of Impact from 7 to 8 p.m. And tune in to Grown Folks Talking by dialing 520-525-8633. That's 520-525-8633. And, you know, for those of you on the line, as I said, many occasions, you know, you can check me out on my YouTube channel and, you know, press subscribe and get others and share information. I haven't been, you know, adding nothing new right now. I've been a little tied up, but I'm going to start adding some new material up there. It's at ANDREHILL 9. That's at ANDREHILL 9. I pray to you, the creator of all in existence, that you touch every heart and renew every mind who hears the vibrations of my voice, so that our hearts, minds, and souls will come together and function as though we are one body. I pray that you bless each and every one of us with the spirit of unity and forgiveness, with the ability to put aside our differences so that we can work together towards the much-needed changes within ourselves and within our communities for the sake of the present and future generations. I pray with all my heart that our Creator has planted something incredible in each and every one of us that we will carry with us and share with others from this day forward. Anything that I said that was insightful and helpful came from Allah. Anything that I said that was unclear or confusing came from me, and I ask your forgiveness. In closing, don't forget to reach out to someone whom you love or care about just to see if they're okay or how they're doing. With that being said, may all of you be inspired and motivated to begin your journey towards a higher level of thinking, self-evaluation. Until our next encounter, have a great night. I love you all like I love myself. Bring the song in, my brother Jay. Thank you.
Ha ha ha.